I'm going to be reading Majjhima Nikaya 149, which is the Great Sixfold Base. And this is the translation that I'm using, which is from Bhikkhu Bodhi. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jetta's Grove, Anathapindika's park. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus. Bhikkhus, Venerable Sir, they replied. The Blessed One said this. Bhikkhus, I shall teach you a discourse on the Great Sixfold Base. Listen and attend closely to what I shall say. Yes, Venerable Sir, the bhikkhus replied. The Blessed One said this. Bhikkhus, when one does not know and see the I as it actually is, when one does not know and see forms as they actually are, when one does not know and see eye consciousness as it actually is, when one does not know and see eye contact as it actually is, when one does not know and see as it actually is, the feeling that is felt as pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, that arises with eye contact as condition, then one is inflamed by lust for the eye, for forms, for eye consciousness, for eye contact, for the feeling felt as pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, that arises with eye contact as condition. When one abides inflamed by lust, fettered, infatuated, contemplating gratification, then the five aggregates affected by clinging are built up for oneself in the future, and one's craving, which brings renewal of being, is accompanied by delight and lust, and delights in this and that increases. One's bodily and mental troubles increase. One's bodily and mental torments increase. One's bodily and mental fevers increase. And one experiences bodily and mental suffering. When one does not know and see the year as it actually is, when one does not know and see the nose as it actually is, when one does not know and see the tongue as it actually is, when one does not know and see the body as it actually is, when one does not know and see the mind as it actually is, one experiences bodily and mental suffering. Bhikkhus, when one knows and sees the I as it actually is, when one knows and sees forms as they actually are, when one knows and sees eye consciousness as it actually is, when one knows and sees eye contact as it actually is, when one knows and sees as it actually is, the feeling felt as pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, that arises with eye contact as condition, then one is not inflamed by lust for the eyes, for forms, for eye consciousness, for eye contact, for the feeling felt as pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, that arises with eye contact as condition. When one abides uninflamed by lust, unfettered, uninfatuated, contemplating danger, then the five aggregates affected by clinging are diminished for oneself in the future, and one's craving, which brings renewal of being, is accompanied by lust, delight and lust, and delights in this or that is abandoned. One's bodily and mental troubles are abandoned. One's bodily and mental torments are abandoned. One's bodily and mental fevers are abandoned, and one experiences bodily and mental pleasure. The view of a person such as this is right view. His intention is right intention. His effort is right effort. His mindfulness is right mindfulness. His collectedness is right collectedness. But his bodily action, his verbal action, and his livelihood have already been well purified earlier. Thus, this Noble Eightfold Path comes to fulfillment in him by development. When he develops this Noble Eightfold Path, the four foundations of mindfulness also come to fulfillment in him by development. The four kinds of striving also come to fulfillment in him by development. The four bases for spiritual power also come to fulfillment in him by development. The five faculties also come to fulfillment in him by development. The five powers also come to fulfillment in him by development. The seven enlightenment factors also come to fulfillment in him by development. These two things, serenity and insight, occur in him yoked evenly together. He fully understands by direct knowledge those things that should be fully understood by direct knowledge. He abandons by direct knowledge those things that should be abandoned by direct knowledge. He develops by direct knowledge those things that should be developed by direct knowledge. He realizes by direct knowledge those things that should be realized by direct knowledge, and what things should be fully understood by direct knowledge. The answer to that is the five aggregates affected by clinging. That is the material form aggregate affected by clinging, the feeling aggregate affected by clinging, the perception aggregate affected by clinging, the formations aggregate affected by clinging, the consciousness aggregate affected by clinging. These are the things that should be fully understood by direct knowledge. And what things should be abandoned by direct knowledge? Ignorance and craving for being. These are the things that should be abandoned by direct knowledge. And what things should be developed by direct knowledge? Serenity and insight. These are the things that should be developed by direct knowledge. And what things should be realized by direct knowledge? True knowledge and deliverance. These are the things that should be realized by direct knowledge. When one knows and sees the year as it actually is, these are the things that should be realized by direct knowledge. When one knows and sees the knows as it actually is, these are the things that should be realized by direct knowledge. When one knows and sees the tongue as it actually is, these are the things that should be realized by direct knowledge. When one knows and sees the body as it actually is, these are the things that should be realized by direct knowledge. When one knows and sees the mind as it actually is, these are the things that should be realized by direct knowledge. This is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So the Buddha starts off by talking about the six sense bases. And he first begins with an individual who is not yet on the path, or who hasn't developed the path to the extent that they take the experience of the six sense bases to be personal with craving, to become inflamed, as he said, by delight and lust, to take into every experience and identify with it, by feeding it with craving, by wanting more of the experience, or by wanting less of the experience because it affects negatively a sense of self, or in a neutral sense, to take it personal and to attach that sense of self. But when one cultivates the understanding when beginning on the Noble Eightfold Path and starts to exercise one's wisdom and cultivates one's collectedness and mindfulness, one starts to see in every present moment as they become mindful, as they observe in every present moment, the sensory experiences that are felt. And in that feeling, understanding, having cultivated some level of insight and knowledge, to be able to see that the experiences of visual forms through the eye, the experience of auditory sounds through the ears, the experience of odors and fragrances through the nose, the experience of tastes on the tongue, the experiences of tangibles with the skin and the body, and the experience of mental objects that are thoughts with the mind, are seen as namely impermanent, not worth holding on to because they are impermanent and can cause suffering by identifying with it, and therefore not to be considered a sense of self that is satisfying and unchanging and independent of causes and conditions. If one watches and observes without involvement, without looking for it, without trying to control the present moment, and merely observes using the four foundations of mindfulness, using effective observation, one can see that in the arising and passing away of each iota, of each quanta of sensory experience, that there is no controller there, that it is happening all on its own through a series of causes and conditions and different factors within and without the body, inside and outside the body. And as one sees this, they see that in the arising and passing away, since there is no controller and it's not self-caused in that sense, that it must be seen as something that will not be satisfactory. And because of each arising and passing away happening so rapidly, that it appears to be one flowing motion, let's say, of sensory experience, that the mind considers it to be permanent and flowing. But in reality, one starts to see that each arising and passing away is a frame of sensory experience, and therefore it is impermanent. And as soon as it arises away, it passes away. There is no abiding in that. This is primarily seen through the meditation practice, once again, in the level of infinite consciousness, in the sixth jhana, after having seen infinite space, which gradually shows to the being who is meditating without any focus, without pushing, without trying to create it, without trying to intellectualize it, or without trying to analyze it, just allowing the mind to unravel naturally resting in the mind's clarity of observation, these phenomena will present themselves in this way. The sensory phenomena will start to slow down, will start to appear as frames of a film. And when one sees this in the practice, one continues to just observe, and the insights that arise because the mind is not so focused that it suppresses it and pushes down the mind, and thereby not allowing the insights to arise. Instead, the insights will arise, and these insights will be into the three characteristics of all phenomena. And one will see that, yes, indeed, that these sensory experiences arise and pass away and are impermanent in their arising and passing away. There is no worth holding on to anything in this arising and passing away. There is no worth abiding in any of this arising and passing away. And therefore, it starts to become tiresome to watch. And this can be extrapolated towards all of samsara. This arising and passing away of sensory experiences, which are linked to one iota of consciousness per one iota of sensory experience, because it continues to arise and pass away, on the macro level, on their larger scale, the macrocosm, if you will, of experience, the rebirth that arises from one life, from one mentality, materiality to another, is also tiresome. It is not self-caused. One did not choose, so to speak, through a sense of permanent self, that it was a divine soul or spirit that chose to take birth in this. It was chosen through previous actions that were enacted by the given choices that were provided in each present moment, which then created the formations or activated certain formations and strengthened or weakened whichever formations in relation to that choice. And then when at the dissolution of the body, the mind with intention held on to those formations, and then which activated a certain consciousness through that intention, then took birth or conception in a particular mentality or mentality materiality. So whether it is on the level of the microsecond or the level of the eon, this rebirth is always impermanent. It is always transient, and it doesn't have a controller that is overarching and all-encompassing in the sense of a permanent, unchanging, everlasting self. But that the self is built up through the choices that one takes personal, and that this microcosmic and macrocosmic rebirth is suffering because it becomes tiresome. Once one penetrates with wisdom and understanding of this impermanent nature of this arising and passing away, one sees that it is suffering, and from this foundation of suffering, decides through that present choice to make an end of the suffering, which then leads such an individual on a path to inquiry, on a path to find out the answers. And at a certain point in time, one will encounter the Noble Eightfold Path, the dispensation of the Buddha, and one will see and understand on an intellectual level what is right view, At first, one will understand through the theoretical intellectual knowledge of karma and rebirth and the beings that inhabit the different realms of existence. And eventually, as one starts to understand and builds up their faith and conviction that this indeed is the right path to follow, and starts to understand that the fruit of karma is through action, one will start to make an intention, an effective choice to always try to keep the precepts, always try to maintain them, and act, speak, and think from a sense of harmony, from loving kindness, from collectedness, from acting through mindfulness, and understanding that beings that may negatively affect them don't require to be responded to or reacted to in the same way, and that instead that such a being requires understanding and compassion or empathetic joy or equanimity or tranquility and silence. So such a being starts to understand the value of acting from right action, speaking from right speech, and having right livelihood. And therefore, by starting to act and speak, think, and live in such a way that is rooted in the Eightfold Path, one starts to purify the formations. One starts to, through each action, through each thought, through the level of contact, make the choices which will then condition and strengthen formations that enable a mind that is clear and collected for the purposes of entering jhana, and start to weaken those formations that are fettered by craving and ignorance, and that were at a previous time strengthened through acting in a way that causes the hindrances by breaking the precepts and through unawareness and not using mindfulness. And so the way this is done is through right effort, in the sense that one understands in that choice if something is being acted upon in a negative manner, one abandons it, prevents any more of that outflow of negativity, abandons the craving and the ignorance and the conceit that caused the flow of that negativity, to act in a way that is not rooted in the Eightfold Path, and then cultivates and brings up a wholesome quality of mind, a mind that is cool, calm, and collected, a natural sense of clarity that arises from bringing that wholesome state of mind, and continues to maintain that, and on a larger scale, continues to make the effort to maintain the wholesome state of mind, and maintain the sort of mind that is ready and able and capable of being able to see reality as it is without any kind of filters, to be able to understand how the body is in the present moment, to be able to understand how the senses are arising in the present moment, to be able to understand where mind is in the present moment, what sort of a mindset has been developed for that present moment, what sort of emotional moods are arising for that present moment, and what sort of mental states are present within such a mind or mindset. And by doing this, one becomes aware and starts to develop collectedness by using and applying effective observation or right mindfulness. At that point in time, the mind naturally tends towards seclusion, tends towards a wholesome state. By practicing in daily living these precepts and making an intention, a choice to act out of harmlessness, to act from the Brahmaviharas, and to speak and act and live in accordance with that, and to have an attitude of letting go of the unwholesome, letting go of the craving, letting go of the personalizing through conceit, by being aware of the present choices that are given in every moment. And then this translates into collectedness, where it is easier then for the mind to enter into jhana. And as you enter into jhana and as you meditate, you start to cultivate the ability to continue to have clarity of mind by using the four right efforts or the four effective applications or the 6R process whenever a hindrance distracts you from your object or vehicle of meditation. And as you do this, as we've spoken about before, you start to cultivate higher and higher levels of understanding and start to see at the sixth jhana, infinite consciousness, which then allows your mind to sink deeper into that nothingness. And as you then enter into the eighth jhana, and as you then enter into cessation, come out of it and have that nirvana experience, you then start to see for yourself how the quality of your thoughts might have changed, how the perspective might have shifted for you, how the quality of the words that you speak, of the actions you take, and the perceptions that you have of reality shift and change. And you must be your own judge in that regard, and understand whether there has been a transformation through this process. And you will experience great relief in the beginning, and there will be quite a lot of amounts of joy and energy in the mind. And allow this joy and energy to be seen as impermanent, as impersonal, and not worth holding on to, because it is impermanent and impersonal. And from that form of a mindset, come back to the sitting mat, come back to your chair, and try to sit again, and don't expect anything. Watch what happens. Allow the mind to further unravel itself. Don't expect that the cessation experience will arise, because now if you do that, you start to create a conception that it's going to happen again, and you're going to look for it. And by trying to look for it, what you are doing is starting to again activate the fetters within the formations that create that craving, that create that conceit, and that create that ignorance. So just come back and continue to observe, and 6R that expectation, 6R that concept that has been built up through the experience of nibbana and of cessation, of how it needs to be experienced or what I should be looking for, or what are the signposts that are leading to it. Just watch and six are all of these things that might come up. And perhaps it may take some time, and that's okay. Just know that there has indeed, if you see in your own mind, been a perspective shift. And therefore, you have cultivated the Eightfold Path. You have walked the path. You have entered and walked the path and seen a preview of what is to come by having that cessation experience, by having that Nibbana experience. But now you must deepen the practice by further letting go of any concepts that arise from those experiences. Now, as you continue sitting and as you continue letting go, when you go back into your daily life, continue to see the choices that are presented to you and watch where your mind tends to. Your mind will inevitably tend towards choices that are wholesome. And therefore, by continually doing this and continually letting go the need to control what is the outcome of those choices, both in the sitting practice and in daily living, you cultivate the attitude of letting go. And as you let go of the personalizing aspect of the mind. You let go of the craving that could take root and then create suffering through the rest of the links of dependent origination. So after or even before you have this experience, develop that attitude, develop that intention that you will let go of anything that arises from the sensory experiences, good, bad, indifferent, neutral, whatever they may be. Understand first, if it's required from an intellectual perspective, that this is not me, this is not mine, this is not myself, and therefore I should not crave for it. And with that mindfulness, in letting go of that perspective, in letting go of that wrong view, you cultivate the right view. You continue to develop the right view in practicing that in your daily choices, in practicing that whenever you six are in the meditation practice. And you start to apply and understand for yourself what the Four Noble Truths are in that regard, in action. And you start to have the experiential understanding bit by bit of the Four Noble Truths. You're further whittling away at the ignorance that continue to condition the formations. And by whittling away at the fetter of ignorance, the fetter of conceit, and the fetter of craving, and replacing it with this continual practice of right view, of applying the Four Noble Truths from that perspective, you are replacing those fetters and you are establishing that right view. Eventually, the right view will take the place of ignorance, and therefore any actions that are committed will be from that perfected right view, from that actualized and realized and experientially understood right view. And therefore the choices you make will always automatically be rooted in that right view. And because of that, you will speak, you will act, and you will have a livelihood that is rooted in right view. And your mind is in a state of automatically not abiding in anything from a sense of self, not abiding in any arising of any activity or any phenomenon that appears through sensory experiences. And because of that true experience of the three characteristics of existence, first at the level of infinite consciousness, and then understanding on the deeper level as you start to observe the sensory experiences, that you no longer take them to be permanent. You understand them to be impermanent. You no longer depend upon them to be your source of happiness. And so you let go of them and you understand that there is no controller and they are impersonal. So you don't attach a sense of self. So every time you do that, you are closing off the ability to create further karma, to create further new karma, and the potential for suffering to arise. So every time you have a feeling, every time you have a sensory experience, you understand it to be old karma, and you let it go at the level of feeling. You let it go at the level of contact, feeling, and perception. And therefore, you are understanding how to apply right effort or effective application at the level of contact and feeling by not holding on to the unwholesome or that which could cause further ignorance or that which could cause further craving or that which should cause further being. And as you continue to do this before having attained full awakening, it will translate in the meditation. And like I said before, once right view has replaced ignorance, at that point in time, the taints, the defilements, the projections of craving, of being, of ignorance are utterly destroyed. So always, whenever from having achieved that in that sense, having understood it and having replaced ignorance with right view, the right effort that you do will in this case only be to continue to see the emptiness of self in each phenomena, the impermanence of each phenomena, and the idea and understanding that it is not worth holding on to for each phenomena. And you naturally are mindful. There is a natural, uncontrived, unfabricated clarity of mind, which is automatically observing and mindful of every moment in relation to the four foundations, in relation to where your body is, in relation to what the sensory experiences of the mind and body are, in relation to the mindsets and moods, and in relation to the mental contents within those mindsets and moods, within the mind. And so when then you enter into jhana practice, you don't have a sense of self there and just automatically enter into and abide in the jhanas for that time being without the sense of self. And eventually you will be able to cultivate the ability to get into cessation at will, to be the ability to get into the signless samadhi at will, the ability to get into the other levels of meditation practice of having just let go and understood the three characteristics of existence and be able to let go of any sense of self in the aggregates for that time being and then come into levels of deeper and deeper practice. So that is what needs to be understood, is ultimately about the five aggregates. That is that the clinging aspect of the five aggregates, as we mentioned earlier, some time back, is what needs to be understood and penetrated with correct understanding, with effective vision, with right view, and let go of, and just see that these aggregates in of themselves are impermanent, impersonal, and not worth holding on to. And by doing this, by applying this understanding to the aggregates, to the sixth sense bases, you are naturally at ease. You are naturally in a state of mind that is inclining towards seclusion, that is inclining towards Nibbana. Just upon reflecting the aggregates in this way, after having established right view and destroyed the fetters, such a released mind enters into and takes the third noble truth of cessation as its vehicle of meditation, and that mind naturally attends to the cessation of being, the cessation of suffering, and cessation in of itself, and by attending in that manner, enters and makes contact with the Nibbana element, taking that as the object, so to speak, and finds bliss and peace from that Nibbana. That mind does not apply a sense of self to any of that process, because it cannot anymore. It has made such a mind void of the ability to crave. It has made that mind void of the ability to take anything personal, void of the ability to crave, to take anything personal, and to misperceive reality as it is. It will always automatically understand the reality of the situation as it arises. And because of such a mind, it is able to enter and exit various stages of meditation practice, various levels of meditation practice. Now, in this particular sutta, the Buddha also talks about the seven enlightenment factors, which we have gone through and somewhat understood through the process of this retreat. He also talks about the four foundations of mindfulness. He talks about the five faculties and the five powers. And he talks about the four bases of psychic abilities. These are what make up the, and also in along with that is the Eightfold Path itself. So all of these make up what are the 37 requisites for awakening. By developing the Eightfold Path, you automatically develop the four foundations of mindfulness. You automatically develop and understand how to balance the seven factors of awakening. You energize the mind with the four bases for psychic abilities, which includes the cultivated intention, the energy or the effort, the mindfulness, and the investigation or the understanding aspect of the mind. And then you also further develop the five faculties and the five powers of those five faculties. In the same way that contact, feeling, and perception are both faculties through which the processes of contact, feeling, and perception occur, the five faculties are from which the five powers occur. And this is also developed, these five faculties and these five powers, which include the mindfulness or the mind, which include the energy, which include the conviction and the faith, which includes wisdom or understanding, which includes the energy and effort. You are able to cultivate and develop these whenever you walk the Eightfold Path. So everything revolves around having cultivated and developed the Eightfold Path. So all of these are part and parcel of the Eightfold Path whenever you actualize them, whenever you actualize the different aspects of the Eightfold Path. And having cultivated this, and having cultivated and developed these, such a being, if they wanted to, can further develop the four bases and through jhana practice start to cultivate and develop psychic powers, if so the inclination were there. There are also times where there are formations that have been built up through previous rebirths where there was a cultivated intention to be able to develop such powers, and they become actualized when one starts to have the jhana experiences and the cessation experience and the nibbana experience. And so the formations that were cultivated start to bear fruit through the four bases to be able to actualize the psychic abilities that the mind was inclined towards. But to simplify everything, what needs to be understood for the purposes of liberation is to see with understanding, to see with a collected mind, to see with mindfulness, and to see with wisdom the destruction of the taints, the destruction of the fetters. And that is the ultimate psychic power, so to speak, which provides one complete peace, which provides one complete liberation, and to get off of the wheel of samsara.